This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest grew up in a harem, but she's now one of Morocco's best-known feminists. Fatima Mernissi is the author of The Veil and the Male Elite, a feminist interpretation of women's rights in Islam. Her forthcoming book, Dreams of Trespass, is a memoir about growing up in a harem. The harem was the part of a Muslim house that women were secluded in. Her family shared a compound with her aunt, uncle, cousins, and grandmother. Upstairs, in more modest quarters, lived her divorced and widowed women relatives and their children. Mernissi was born in 1941 in Morocco and grew up in the first generation of girls who were allowed to go to school. Her mother was only allowed out of the harem for special occasions and religious festivals. I asked Mernissi if her mother felt like a prisoner in the harem.
Well, she hated it, of course. She hated it. Mostly because already the Arab world then was completely entranced with the idea of progress and the nationalist songs, you know, about freedom and self-fulfillment and all that. She would hear it on Radio Cairo. And Cairo and the Ottoman, Turkey was then the center of an incredibly powerful feminist movement. And they will hear the songs, they will see the movies with all these feminists, stars in a way. Believe it or not, the feminists were stars. And they were on the press and on the, just like movie stars here now today. And so she could just compare how sad was her confinement.
Did your mother try to not wear a veil when she went out?
She fought in the limits which were granted to her. What she did was, instead of wearing the hayek, for example, which is this 7 meters long piece of white cloth, she wanted to take men's jellaba, which is the long robe with trimmed sleeves, which give much more freedom to the movements. And that was a huge battle, because it was like when the French women or the American women took the liberty to wear men's pants. It was the same thing.
So what was your father's attitude?
Oh, of course, he opposed it. It was a big battle, but she won. And that was one thing. The other thing was the little piece she used to put around her face. We call it litham. Now they say veil, but it is. I am talking about the little piece you put around your face to cover your mouth and nose. And that little piece, which was supposed to be very opaque and not transparent, my mother fought to get it to change it into a very transparent chiffon, silk chiffon little piece she put on her nose. And that was a big scandal until it became just a normal fashion the wives of the nationalists brought to town. And then in the meanwhile, while she was fighting for that, the daughters of the nationalists started going out in Western dresses.
Did you always support your mother in these battles? Did you have an opinion?
Support her, she would support me. I mean, she was such a strong feminist advocate. I wouldn't say she support. I think she pushed all of us so fast that we couldn't but be strong feminists in a way.
Did you ever have to wear the veil or that long cloth you were describing yourself?
No, because in the 40s that was already finished. That was already the past, or in the villages, like, let's say, the women would be backward men would be veiling their daughters. But the sophisticated men of the cities were already into something else, you know, into getting the education for their daughters, wanting them to speak foreign languages.
So there was a different standard when you were growing up between what you were supposed to do and your mother. Your mother still had to wear a veil, but you weren't expected to?
Absolutely. You see, between the two generations, actually, one woman, a historian, told me, a Moroccan historian, that in Morocco, 10 years of difference between women, in women's age, like, let's say, two sisters who have 10 years of difference, they would be belonging to different centuries. You know, the age does not have the same impact. My mother was living, practically in the medieval time, and I was already in 20th century. So the generation between mother and daughter was an incredible progress for women. And there is actually, one cannot understand what's happening to women in the Middle East if they don't realize that the mothers are strong, progressive force. The mothers push the daughters to get out of the harem, to get the education, to achieve what they could not even dream of. The result is now, with only one or two generations of women who have, actually only in the 60s did millions of Arab women get access to education, massive education, state-paid education. Now we are one-third of the university professors in many Arab countries are women.
You studied in the West in college. You studied at the Sorbonne in Paris. You studied at Brandeis University in the United States. A lot of people who come to the West to study stay there. You returned to Morocco in spite of all the limitations on women's freedom there. You continue to live in Morocco. What has kept you there?
Oh, my God. I think if you know Morocco, you'll understand my situation. Morocco is such a beautiful place. It's incredibly beautiful. And also, it is a captivating place because for a writer, you feel that you make impact. I mean, when I write something in the press, the day after, in the fish market, people would be discussing, either they're attacking me or they like what I've written, and then two men will get into a fight with each other. One is for me and the other against me. So you are umbilically linked and rooted in this society which has its own, of course, worries and fears about modernity.
You've written several books basically giving a feminist interpretation of women's rights in Islam and to challenge certain beliefs that people have, the beliefs that Islam is an inherently sexist religion and culture. You've gone back to the text and you say that's not so. So I take it you've remained a Muslim even though you've challenged a lot of people's beliefs about Islam.
Absolutely. You see, one of the frontiers I crossed is actually the act of analyzing the memoir and the religious text and the historical text and how history is made and framed and produced and packaged. And I just, by looking and doing that, I mean reading history for myself, I discovered first of all that the Prophet is a wonderful person and any Muslim woman could claim it as an inspiring model. And this is on one hand. And on the other hand, that I showed that the real boundary was, and the real mistake of women was to let the memoir, the collective, the history, space to, of producing history, to let it in the hands of men. And I started this slogan, I, as a Muslim woman, living in 1993, I want to have two things, the mosque and the satellite, both at the same time. And no one can mutilate me by telling me I cannot have the mosque or the Quran. Someone else is going to read for me or to go at my place to the mosque, and or to tell me you shouldn't take anything from the West because the West is the enemy and so on. It is to me to decide. I am intelligent enough to be critical towards the West and take what I need and reject what is bad for me.
So you want to find a way to maintain your religion and Islamic culture, but also live in the modern world, have equal rights with men, live with 20th century technology if you choose to use it. You don't think the two should be contradictory?
On the contrary, the more satellite, you see, the more satellites there is in the skies, the most televisions sending us all kind of messages from the West, the more we need our memoir. So you need your traditional, your civilizational background just to situate yourself and remember who you are in front of this mediatic invasion by consumerist messages of all kinds.
My guest is Fatima Mernissi. She's a well-known Moroccan writer and feminist. Her books include The Veil and the Male Elite, a feminist interpretation of women's rights in Islam. And she has a forthcoming memoir called Dreams of Trespass, Tales of a Harem Girlhood. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Moroccan writer and feminist Fatima Mernissi is my guest. What kind of reaction has your father and mother? I should say, I don't know if they're still alive.
My mother is still alive. My father died when I was young.
What kind of reaction has your mother had to the work that you've done and the things that you've written? You described her before as a very strong woman and as a woman who rebelled against a lot of the restrictive customs.
She doesn't think I have done enough, because what she would like me to do is to have a political career. She is mad with Moroccan women because we did not invade the parliament and we are not making the laws and we don't have a television. She told me, what kind of power do you have with the books instead of getting yourself enough money to buy a television? And I I just think that she is completely okay, and I was thinking about why I didn't do this. Yeah, because that's why power is, in fact.
Has she been able to take advantage of the new opportunities open to women since the period of your childhood when your father enforced a very restrictive life?
Well, she remarried after my father died. And what she loved the most was traveling to other parts of Morocco. Also, she went to Spain and discovered that Spanish didn't speak Arabic. So discovering the world and the other culture is indeed something she is fascinated with. However, she didn't make the effort to become literate. Or she just told me she has too much stuff on her mind to concentrate on learning how to write and read. And she didn't try to learn foreign languages.
What was it like for her to start going out on her own after so many years of her adulthood in which she wasn't allowed beyond the door?
She loved it, of course. She loved it. More of this... one thing she couldn't do, for example, she, like, I am in from Fez, which is this 9th century old city with a lot of crafts. And one of the things women do, and I still do myself, is you make your own clothes. You don't buy them all made. So that you choose a piece of silk or the color you like, then you keep it for a while and you think about what kind of passementry and embroidery you want to put on it. Then you discuss that with the man who does the passementry or the woman who does the embroidery, or you do it yourself. Well, she couldn't go out to choose the cloth or the silk, the color of the silk, because, you know, I don't know if you have been in a store where there is this silk colors. It's just wonderful shades and stuff. She could never do it. And one of the pleasures of her post-harem life was to go for hours to choose and match the colors of the kaftans she creates. You know, when you have been in a harem, it was too late for her to do, you know, to do business, for example. She would have liked it. But she needed to get more information, and it was too late to get into that kind of radical change of your life.
Do you think your mother was typical in being such a strong woman and in being such a rebellious woman?
Absolutely. The women, one of my big findings, for example, looking at my life and that of my mother, is the traditional women did not make the compromises the modern women are making, because they didn't have much to lose. But me, I have a lot to lose. So, like in a department meeting at the university, I try not to. I try to be sleek in a way. I mean, not to avoid confrontation. And I know I have to get, let's say that I want to organize something at 6 o'clock, and I have to persuade the two teachers that they have to change their own schedule. So I make compromises. I try to be really cute. My mother would never do that.
You have a forthcoming novel about growing up in a harem. And I've been able to read a couple of advanced chapters from that memoir, which I enjoyed. And along with those chapters, I have the table of contents for the forthcoming book. One of the chapters is called Mustaches and Breasts. What is this chapter about?
It's about me turning... getting to be 9 and learning what happens, you know, to your body when you are about to become a
pubescent.
And that was taught to us in school, because that's part of our Muslim education, to teach us about the body transformations, because you have to have knowledge, you know, scientific knowledge. And then when I came back to school, from school, to my mother and told her that I know that my little cousin is going to be very soon having a very strong voice and mustache, and that I would have breast, and she was completely taken back and shocked that I was given this information, and that I was no more a child. So the book is about that empowerment of the little kids when they get cosmic information about bodies and about how children are made and all that thing.
I have one last question. You're visiting the United States on a short trip. Are you comfortable as a woman in Western culture, or do you feel Western culture goes too far with certain things?
You see, Morocco is a very strange place. You know that Morocco, in the summer, you have maybe 3 million of Moroccans on the beach, swimming, men and women, with bikinis and stuff. So for me, the West is not that far. And of course, we will swim during the day, and then during the night I wear my kaftan. Of course, what the problem with being in America, for example, for me is the speed. Mm-hmm. I am completely exhausted by 3 o'clock. I cannot put my ideas together because there is everything is going too fast, and I'm not used to being bombarded with so much information. I usually have 2 hours a day on meditating, and it's often in the morning. Since I am here, I don't have, not only those 2 hours are taken by a lot of stuff I have to do, but I don't have a minute to sit and see what I'm doing, where I'm heading. You know, just like coming to the taxi to this meeting with you, I was trying to see if I could get 5 minutes just to concentrate, because for me that's absolutely necessary. And I couldn't do it because I was too dispersé, looking left and right to the new buildings and all that stuff. And then finally I just said, okay, I just have to do it like the Americans do, which is they don't stop to reflect. and I'll see what will happen.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Merci.
Fatima Mernissi teaches sociology at the University of Mohammed V in Morocco. She's the author of The Veil and the Male Elite, a feminist interpretation of women's rights in Islam. Her forthcoming memoir about growing up in a harem is called Dreams of Trespass. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.